Random House Audio presents Smokin' 17 by Janet Ivanovich. Read by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. My Grandma Mazur called me early this morning.
"I had a dream," Grandma said. "There was this big horse, and it could fly. It didn't have wings, it could just fly. And the horse flew over top of you and started dropping road apples, and you were running around trying to get out of the way of the road apples. And the funny thing was, you didn't have any clothes on, except a red lace thong kind of underpants. Anyways, next thing, a rhinoceros flew over you, and he was sort of hovering over top of your head. And then I woke up. I got a feeling it means something."
"What?" I asked.
"I don't know, but it can't be good."
And she disconnected. So, that's how my day started. And to tell you the truth, the dream pretty much summed up my life. My name is Stephanie Plum. I work as a bond enforcer for my cousin Vinny's bail bonds office, and I live in an uninspired, low-rent, three-story, brick-faced chunk of an apartment building on the edge of Trenton, New Jersey. My second-floor apartment is furnished with my relatives' cast-offs. I'm average height. I have an okay shape. I'm pretty sure I'm averagely intelligent. And I know for sure I have a crummy job. My shoulder-length curly brown hair is inherited from the Italian side of the family, my blue eyes from the Hungarian side of the family, and I have an excellent nose that's a gift from God. Good thing he gave me the nose before he found out I wasn't the world's best Catholic. It was early September and unseasonably hot. I had my hair up in a ponytail. I'd forgone makeup and opted for lip balm instead. And I was wearing a red stretchy tank top, jeans, and sneakers. Perfect clothes for running down bad guys or buying donuts. I parked my hunk of junk Ford Escort in front of Tasty Pastry Bakery on Hamilton Avenue and mentally counted out the money in my wallet. Definitely enough for two donuts, not enough for three. I parked the car and went into the bakery where Loretta Kucharski was behind the counter. Last year, Loretta was vice president of a bank. When the bank went belly up, Loretta got the job at Tasty Pastry. To my way of thinking, it was definitely career advancement. I mean, who doesn't want to work in a bakery?
"What'll it be?" Loretta asked me. "Cannoli? Italian cookies? Donut?"
"Donuts.
Boston cream chocolate cake, jelly, lemon glaze, cinnamon sugar, blueberry, pumpkin, spice chocolate glazed, cream-filled bear claw or maple."
I bit into my lower lip. I wanted them all.
"Definitely a Boston cream."
Loretta carefully placed a Boston cream in a small white bakery box. "And?"
"Jelly donut," I said. "No, wait, maple. No, either maple or pumpkin spice, or maybe the chocolate glazed."
The door to the bakery opened, and an old woman who looked like an extra out of a low-budget mafia movie marched in. She was small and wiry and dressed in black. Plain black dress, black scarf on her steel-gray hair, sensible black shoes, dark stockings, snapping dark eyes under bushy gray eyebrows, Mediterranean skin tone. Loretta and I gasped when we saw her. It was Bella, the most terrifying woman in Trenton. She'd immigrated to the States over 50 years ago, but she was still more Sicilian than American. She was devious and sly and possibly flat-out crazy. She was also my boyfriend's grandmother. Loretta made the sign of the cross and asked the Holy Mother for protection. Considering my lack of church attendance, I didn't feel comfy asking the Holy Mother for help, so I gave Bella a weak smile and a small wave. Grandma Bella pointed a bony finger at me.
"You! What are you doing here?"
To say that my relationship with Grandma Bella was tenuous would be a gross understatement. Not only am I the harlot who, to her way of thinking, seduced and corrupted Joseph Anthony Morelli, her favorite grandson, but even more damning, I'm Edna Mazur's granddaughter. Grandma Bella and my Grandma Mazur do not get along.
"D-d-donut," I said to Bella.
"Get out of my way,"
Bella said, pushing me aside, stepping up to the counter.
"I was here first."
Loretta's eyes were as big as duck eggs darting back and forth between Bella and me. Loretta said, still holding the bakery box containing my Boston cream.
"Actually, I was here first," I said to Bella, "but you can go ahead of me if you want."
"What? You are telling me you first? You dare to say such a thing?
Bella hit me in the arm with her purse.
You have no respect.
Cripes, I said. Get a grip.
Christ? You say Christ?
Bella crossed herself and pulled her rosary beads out of her pocket.
You burn in a hell. You are gonna get a smite down. Get away from me. I don't want to be near when it happens.
I didn't say Christ. I said cripes.
You a heathen, Bella said. Like your grandma Edna, she should rot in a hell.
Okay, so Bella was a crazy old lady, but that was going too far. Hey, watch what you say about my grandmother, I said to Bella. Bella shook her finger at me.
I put the eye on you. I fix you good.
Loretta sucked in air and ducked down behind the counter. I'm going to tell Joe on you, I said to Bella. You're not supposed to be giving people the eye. Bella tipped her head back and looked down her nose at me.
You think he believe you over his grandma? You think he believe you when you ugly with the boils? You think he believe you when you are fat? When you stink like a cabbage?
Loretta whimpered from behind the counter.
Stay down, Bella said to Loretta. You good girl. I don't want you to get in the way of the eye.
So, here's the thing with the eye. I'm pretty sure it's a bunch of baloney. Still, there's an outside chance that Junior Genovese didn't lose his hair from male pattern baldness. I mean, no one else in his family ever went bald, and it happened right after Bella put the whammy on him. Then there was Rose DeMarco. She accidentally mowed Bella over with her motorized wheelchair, and the next day, Rose broke out with shingles. Loretta popped up, stuffed a bunch of donuts into the bakery box, and threw it at me. Run for it! I caught the box and looked over at Loretta. How many are in here? What do I owe you? Nothing. Just get out of here.
Ha! Too late for her, Bella said to Loretta. She got the eye now. I'll take an almond coffee cake. I want the one in the front with the most icing.
Under normal circumstances, at this time of day, I would head for the bail bonds office on Hamilton. Unfortunately, the bonds office burned down to the ground not so long ago, so for the moment, we're operating out of a motorhome owned by a guy named Mooner. I've known Mooner for a bunch of years, and he wouldn't be my first choice for landlord, but desperate times call for desperate measures. My cousin Vinny needed to find a place with cheap rent, and Mooner needed gas and burrito money. Voila, a mobile bail bonds office. Problem is, I never know exactly where the office is parked. I drove down Hamilton and cruised past the lot that had been the site of the original office. Mooner's bus was there. There was a construction trailer parked at the curb behind Mooner's bus. The charred rubble had been carted away, and there were stakes stuck into the dirt. Vincent Plum Bail Bonds was in rebuilding mode. It was Monday morning, and business as usual, except today there were two cop cars, Joe Morelli's green SUV and the medical examiner's meat wagon parked at odd angles around the construction trailer and Mooner's bus. Four uniformed cops, Morelli, the ME, my cousin Vinny, the bail bonds office manager, Connie Rizzoli, and Mooner were all standing in front of a small backhoe, looking into a shallow pit. I've known Morelli all my life, and he's one of those men who gets better with age. He was a handsome, reckless heartbreaker in high school. He's even more handsome now that his face shows some character and maturity. He's lean and muscular with black hair waving over the top of his ears and along the nape of his neck. His brown eyes are sharp and assessing when he's working. They soften when he's aroused. He's a Trenton plainclothes cop, and he was wearing jeans and boots and a blue button-down shirt with his gun clipped to his belt. This was in sharp contrast to my cousin Vinny, who is 4 inches shorter than Morelli and looks like a weasel with slicked-back hair and pointy-toed shoes. I parked behind Morelli's SUV and joined the group. What are we looking at? I asked Morelli.
I'm guessing Lou Dugan, he said.
A half-rotted hand was poking out of the disturbed dirt, and not far from the hand was something that might be part of a skull. I see a lot of bad things in my job, but this was right up there at the top of the Gunna Gork meter. Chapter 2
Why do you think it's Lou Dugan? The Emmy asked Morelli. Morelli pointed to the hand.
Pinky ring, diamonds and rubies. Dugan was at the pancake supper at St. Joaquin's, told Manny Kruger he was going home, and that was the last anyone saw him.
Lou Dugan wasn't without enemies. He ran a topless titty bar downtown, and it was common knowledge that the women went way beyond lap dances. He was a flamboyant pillar of the community, and I'd heard he could be ruthless in his business dealings. We all looked back at the grisly hand with the pinky ring.
Okay, run the crime scene tape, the ME said to one of the uniforms, and get the state lab out here to exhume the body. Someone's gonna have to stay on the scene until the state takes over. I don't want to screw up.
Awesome, Mooner said. This is like CSI Trenton.
Mooner has shoulder-length brown hair parted in the middle. He's slim and built loosey-goosey. He's my age. He's a nice guy, and his head is for the most part empty since his brain got fried on drugs in high school and never totally regenerated.
I'm not paying for special duty cops, Vinny said. This isn't my bed. Dugan got himself planted at the back of the lot under where the garbage cans used to sit. Seems to me that's city property. This isn't going to hold up construction, is it? They were supposed to start pouring foundation this week. I'm renting bogus office space from Scooby-Doo here. Every extra day is a fork in my eye.
Truth is, Vinny wasn't in a good spot. He was on thin ice with his wife Lucille and his father-in-law, Harry the Hammer. Vinny and Lucille were newly reconciled from a nasty split, and Lucille was keeping her thumb on Vinny's doodles. Even worse, at Lucille's request, Harry had agreed to go back into the bail bonds business and finance Vinny's operation, and Harry had his boot on Vinny's doodles. So, needless to say, Vinny was walking very carefully to avoid intense pain. A red Firebird pulled in, double parked next to my car, and Lula got out. Lula is supposed to do filing for the office, but she pretty much does whatever she wants. She was a blonde today, her curly yellow hair contrasting nicely with her brown skin and her leopard print spandex wrap dress. Her 5'5" body is plus size, but Lula enjoys testing the limits of seam and fabric, squishing herself into a size too petite.
What's going on here?
Lula wanted to know, sinking into the dirt in her 4-inch Via Spiga stilettos.
This office in a butts is a pain in the behind. I never know where anybody is, and nobody's answering their cell phone. How the heck am I supposed to work like this?
You don't work anyway, Vinny said.
Lula leaned forward, hands on hips.
That's a disrespectful attitude, and I don't tolerate no disrespect. I gotta work just to find your stupid office on wheels.
Her eyes moved to the pit and locked onto the hand.
What's that? Are we getting ready for Halloween? This gonna be some kind of scary trick-or-treat place?
We're thinking it's Lou Dugan, I said. The backhoe accidentally dug him up. Lula's eyes about popped out of her head.
Are you shitting me? Lou Dugan? Mr. Titty?
Yeah.
That's disgusting. Is there something attached to that hand? If there is, I don't want to know about it. Dead people give me the creeps. I might need fried chicken to take my mind off all this now. And anyways, what the heck was Mr. Titty doing under the bonds office?
Technically, he was under the garbage cans, Vinny said.
Let me get this straight. Some idiot dug a hole instead of throwing the body in the river or the landfill, Lula said, and they left the ring on his finger? What's with that? That ring's worth something. This here must have been an amateur job.
Everyone stood silent. Lula was right. This wasn't the way things were done in Trenton. I turned to Morelli. Did you catch this case?
Yep,
he said.
Lucky me.
His eyes dropped to my chest, and he leaned close, his lips brushing my ear.
You're looking sexy today. I like this red shirt you're wearing.
I appreciated the compliment, but truth is, Morelli thinks everything I wear is sexy. Morelli has testosterone oozing out of every pore.
I'm going back to the bus, Connie said. I have new cases to process.
Where's the bus going next? Lula asked. I gotta get some chicken to settle my nerves, and then I might stop in to do some filing or something.
The bus is staying here, Vinny said. I'm supposed to meet with the contractor this morning and go over some plans.
That's a bad idea, Lula said. There's probably all kinds of nasty juju leaking out of that decaying carcass. You hang around and you could catch something.
Mooner went white.
Dude.
Morelli wrapped an arm around me and moved me to my car.
I'll buy you dinner tonight if you promise to wear this red top.
And if I don't wear the red top?
I'll buy you dinner anyway.
He opened the passenger side door, removed the bakery box, and looked inside.
This isn't your usual selection. You never get blueberry.
Loretta was in a hurry. It was a free sample. Sort of. Morelli took the blueberry for a test drive, and I ate the Boston cream. Do you think Lou's leaking bad juju? I asked him.
No more than he leaked it when he was alive.
Morelli finished off his donut and kissed me.
Mmm, he said. You taste like chocolate. I have to go back to the station to do paperwork now, but I'll pick you up at 5:30.
Chapter 3 Moonard recently redecorated the interior of his motorhome, and now the walls and ceiling were upholstered in faux black velvet. The furniture was upholstered in black velour. The floor was black shag, and the countertop was black formica. Mooner said it was like coming home to the womb, but I thought it was more like working inside the Death Star. Vinny had commandeered the rear bedroom as his office, and Connie had her computer on the dinette table. A heavy-duty electrical cord, serving as power source, ran like an umbilical cord from the bus to the used bookstore next to the office. Vinny had worked out an arrangement with the owner, Maggie Mason, for electric. Lighting was dim to non-existent, so I felt my way to the couch and inspected it closely before sitting down. Mooner was a good guy, but housekeeping wasn't a priority for him. Last time I was in his motorhome, I sat on a brownie that was camouflaged against the black velour. What's new? I asked Connie. Any interesting cases come in? Connie passed two files to me.
Ziggy Glitch and Merlin Brown both failed to appear for court. Brown is a repeat, armed robbery. Glitch is assault. Glitch is 72 years old. The police report says he's a biter.
Connie is a couple years older than me and a lot more voluptuous. Connie has bigger hair, bigger boobs, is a better shot, and has major cojones. She's also related to half the mob in Trenton. Do you think Lou Dugan was a mob job? I asked Connie.
Usually there's dinner table talk when someone's eliminated, but I haven't heard anything on this one, she said. I think most people thought Dugan was in trouble and hiding somewhere.
I stuffed the files into my tote bag and called Lula on my cell phone.
What? Lula said.
Are you coming back here?
Maybe, maybe not.
I'm headed out. I'm on the hunt for two new FTAs.
Well, I guess I should be on the hunt with you, Lula said. You probably don't even got your gun. What if you gotta shoot someone? What then?
We don't shoot people, I told her.
The hell?
10 minutes later, I picked Lula up in the parking lot of Cluckin' a Bucket. She had her purse slung over her shoulder, a bucket of chicken tucked under her arm, and her hand wrapped around a liter bottle of soda.
A girl needs breakfast, she said, clicking the seatbelt together. Besides, I just come off a diet and I gotta get my strength back.
She laid a paper napkin out on her lap and picked a piece of chicken out of the bucket.
Who we looking for?
Merlin Brown.
Been there, done that, Lula said. We dragged him back to jail last year on that shoplifting charge. He was a real pain in the behind. He didn't want to go. What's he done now?
Armed robbery.
Good for him. Least he's setting his sights higher. Who else you got?
Ziggy Glitch. I handed her his file. He's 72 and wanted for assault. I thought we'd look for him first. Lula thumbed through the papers.
He lives in the burg, Kreiner Street, and it says here he's a biter. I hate them biters.
The burg is a chunk of Trenton attached to Hamilton Avenue, Liberty Street, Broad, and Chambersburg Street. Houses are small, streets are narrow. Televisions are large. I was born and raised in the burg, and my parents still live there. I turned off Hamilton, past St. Francis Hospital, and hit Kreiner. What's Ziggy's history? I asked Lula.
It says here he's retired from working at the button factory. Never married, as far as I can see. Has a sister who signed the bond agreement. She lives in New Brunswick. This looks like his first arrest. Probably he didn't take his meds and got wacky and hit some other old geezer with his cane.
Lula leaned forward, counting off houses.
It's a brick house with a red door, the one with black curtains hanging in all the windows. What's with that?
Ziggy lived in a narrow, two-story house that had 2 feet of lawn and a small front porch. It looked like every other house on the block, with the exception of the black curtains. We got out of the car, rang the doorbell, and waited. No answer.
I bet he's in there, Lula said. Where else would he be? He don't work, and there's no bingo at this time of the morning.
I rang the bell again. We heard some shuffling inside the house, and the door opened a crack.
Yes,
the pale face on the other side of the crack asked. From what I could see, he fit the description of Ziggy Glitch. Thinning gray hair, bony at 5'10". I represent your bail bond agent, I said. You missed a court date, and you need to reschedule.
Come back after dark.
And he slammed the door shut and locked it.
Good going, Lula said to me. I don't know why you use that lame-ass line. It never works. Everybody knows you're going to drag their keister off to jail. And if they wanted to be in jail, they would have kept their stupid court date in the first place.
Hey, I yelled at Ziggy. Come back here and open this door, or we're going to kick it open.
I'm not kicking no door in my Via Spiegas, Lula said.
Great, I'll kick it open all by myself. We both knew this was baloney. Kicking down a door wasn't on my list of skills mastered.
I'm going to the car, Lula said. I got a bucket of chicken there with my name on it.
I followed Lula to the car and drove us the short distance to my parents' house. The Berg is a tight-knit community that runs on gossip and pot roast. Ever since my Grandpa Mazur rode the gravy train to heaven, my Grandma Mazur has lived with my mom and dad. Grandma Mazur knows everything about everyone, and I was betting she knew Ziggy Glitch. Chapter 4. I parked in my parents' driveway. Here's hoping Grandma knows Ziggy and can get him to cooperate. Lula stowed her chicken bucket on the floor.
I love you, Granny. I want to be just like her when I grow up.
Grandma Mazur was at the front door waiting for us, driven by some maternal instinct sensing the approach of offspring. She's sharp-eyed and slack-skinned, and her steel-gray hair is cut short and set into curls. She was wearing a silky lavender and white warm-up suit and white tennis shoes.
What a nice surprise, she said. I got a coffee cake on the table.
I wouldn't mind some coffee cake, Lula said. I was just thinking coffee cake would be real tasty.
My mother was in the kitchen ironing. Physically, she's a younger version of my Grandma Mazur, and physically, I'm a younger version of my mother. Mentally and emotionally, my mother is on her own. Lunacy seems to have skipped a generation, and my mother is left to bear the burden of maintaining standards of decorum for the family. My grandmother and I are the loose cannons.
So why is there ironing going on? Lula asked.
We all knew my mother ironed when she was upset. She ironed for days when my divorce went through. Grandma cut a wide swath around my mother and set the coffee pot on the table.
Margaret Gooley's daughter got engaged, and they already got the Polish National Hall for a November wedding.
And? Lula asked.
I graduated high school with her, I said. Lula sat at the table and cut herself a piece of coffee cake.
And?
My mother pressed the iron into a pair of slacks with enough force to set a seam for the rest of its days.
I don't know why everyone else's daughter gets married, but mine, she said. Is it too much to ask to have a happily married daughter?
I was married, I said. I didn't like it. Grandma slathered butter on her piece of coffee cake.
He was a horse's patoot.
You've been seeing Joseph Morelli for years now, my mother said. It's the talk of the neighborhood. Why aren't you at least engaged?
That was an excellent question, and I didn't have an answer. At least, not an answer I wanted to say out loud. Truth is, Morelli wasn't the only man in my life. I was in love with two men. How screwed up is that?
Yeah, Lula said to me. You need to make a decision about Morelli or someone else is going to snatch him up. He's a real hottie, and he's got his own house and a dog and everything.
I liked Morelli. I really did. And Lula was right. He was hot. And I thought he'd make a good husband. Probably. And there were days when I suspected he might actually consider marrying me. Problem was, just when I thought marrying Morelli held some appeal, Ranger would ooze into my mind like smoke under a closed door. Ranger was not husband material. He was a heart-stopping, handsome Latino, dark-skinned and dark-eyed. He was strong inside and out, an enigma who kept his life scars pretty much hidden. I need to bring Ziggy Glitch in for a reschedule, I said to Grandma. I thought maybe you could call him and get him to go with me.
I could do that, but you have to wait until it gets dark. He don't go out during the day.
Grandma paused.
He's got a condition.
I nibbled on a piece of coffee cake. What kind of condition? A medical condition?
Yeah, I guess it could be considered medical. He's a vampire. If he goes out in the sun, it could kill him. He could burn right up. Remember when Dorothy threw water on the Wicked Witch and the Wizard of Oz and the witch shriveled up? It's sort of like that.
Lula almost spit out her coffee.
Get out of here. Are you shitting me?
That's why he never married, Grandma said. Soon as a woman saw his fangs, she wouldn't have any more to do with him.
So when the cops said he was a biter, they meant he was a biter,
Lula said.
Grandma topped off her coffee. Yep, he'll suck the blood right out of you, every last drop.
That's ridiculous, my mother said. He's not a vampire. He's a man with a dental problem and a personality disorder.
I guess that's one of them politically correct points of view, Lula said. I don't mind presenting things that way so long as I don't get holes in my neck while I'm trying not to offend some mother-sucking vampire, excuse my French. And this is real good coffee cake. Is this Entenmann's?
I didn't see any fangs when he answered the door, I told Grandma.
Well, it's daytime, so maybe he was fixing to go to sleep and he had his dentures in a cup, Grandma said. I don't wear my dentures when I sleep.
Lula leaned back in her chair.
Hold the phone. This guy has fake fangs.
They used to be real, Grandma said. But a couple years ago, Joe's granny Bella gave Ziggy the eye and all his teeth fell out. So Ziggy went to Horace Worley, a dentist on Hamilton Avenue just down from the hospital. Anyways, Horace made Ziggy some new choppers that look just like his old ones.
I looked over at my mother. Is that true? My mother sighed and continued to iron.
I heard they found Lou Dugan, Grandma said. Who would have thought he'd be planted right there on Hamilton Avenue?
We saw him, Lula said. It was like he was trying to climb out of his grave with his hands sticking up out of the dirt.
Grandma sucked in air.
You saw him? What did he look like?
He was all wormy and raggedy.
They're gonna have to work like the devil to make him look like anything for the viewing, Grandma said.
Yeah,
Lula added cream to her coffee.
We might never even have known it was him except for his ring.
Grandma leaned forward.
He was wearing his ring? That ring was worth money. What numbskull would bury Lou Dugan with his ring still on?
Lula cut a second piece of coffee cake.
That's what I said. It would have to be someone in a panic, some amateur.
Or someone sending a message, I thought. It looked to me like the grave had been fairly shallow. Maybe Lou Dugan was supposed to be discovered.
It sure is cozy here in the kitchen, Lula said. I bet if I stayed here long enough, I could forget all about Lou Dugan and his wormy hand.
My parents' house is small and stuffed with comfortable, slightly worn furniture. The windows are draped in white shears. The polished mahogany end tables hold lamps and candy dishes. An orange, brown, and cream hand-crocheted afghan is precisely folded and arranged over the back of the champagne-colored couch. My father's favorite chair has maroon and gold stripes and an impression of his ass permanently imprinted in the seat cushion. The couch and the chair face a newly purchased flat-screen television, and the television fits into a newly purchased mahogany entertainment center. Coasters and magazines are neatly arranged on the narrow coffee table. A laundry basket filled with toys has been placed against the wall in the living room. The toys belong to my sister's kids. The living room leads into the dining room. The dining room table seats 6, but can be enlarged to accommodate more. My mother keeps the table covered with a tablecloth, usually rose or gold, and she places a lace cloth over the colored cloth. It's been this way for as long as I can remember. The dining room is separated from the kitchen by a door that's always open. Just as my father lives in his maroon-striped chair, my mother and grandmother live in the kitchen. When dinner is being prepared and potatoes are boiling, the kitchen is hot and humid, smelling like gravy and apple pie. This morning, the kitchen smelled like freshly ironed clothes and coffee. And Lula had added a hint of fried chicken scent.
I hear Dave Brewer just moved back to Trenton, my mother said to me. Do you remember Dave? You went to school with him.
Dave Brewer had been a big deal football player and entirely out of my league when I was in high school. He went on to college, married, and moved to Atlanta. Last I heard, he was being investigated for illegal foreclosures in the state of Georgia. I thought he was going to jail for swindling people out of their houses, I said to my mother.
He beat that rap, Grandma said. But Marion Kolakowski said he got fired and lost his big house in Atlanta, and then his wife left him and took the dog and the Mercedes.
My mother ironed a non-existent wrinkle out of my father's slacks. Dave's mother was at Mass yesterday. She said it was all a mistake, that Dave didn't do anything wrong. Lula took a third piece of coffee cake.
He must have done something wrong if his wife took the dog and the car. That's harsh.
He comes from a good family, and he was captain of the football team and an honor student, my mother said. I was starting to get a bad feeling about the direction of the conversation. It had all the signs of my mother on a mission.
You should call him, my mother said to me. He would probably like to reconnect with his classmates.
We weren't friends, I told her. I'm sure he wouldn't remember me.
Of course he would remember you, my mother said. His mother was even asking about you.
And there it was, the fix-up. Mrs. Brewer is a nice lady, I said, and I'm sure her son is innocent, and I'm sorry his wife took the dog, but I'm not calling him.
We could have him here for dinner, my mother said.
No, not interested. I wrapped my piece of coffee cake in a napkin and stood.
Gotta go. Got work to do. I don't suppose you took a picture of Lou Dugan, Grandma said to Lula.
That would have been a good idea, Lula said, but I didn't think of it.
I hustled out of the house with Lula not far behind. I jumped into the car and cranked the engine over.
Maybe you should call that Dave guy, Lula said when we got to the corner. He might be the one.
I thought I found the one, but he turned out to be a jerk, so I divorced him. And now I have two guys who might be the one, but I can't decide between them. The last thing I need is a third one.
But maybe you can't decide because neither of them's right. Maybe Dave what's-his-name is the right one. What then?
I see your point, but I have an understanding with Morelli.
Which is what?
Truth is, the understanding was vague. It was a lot like my status as a Catholic. I carried a decent amount of guilt and fear of eternal damnation, but blind faith and total commitment were in scarce supply. We say we can date other people, but we don't do it, I told Lula.
That's stupid, Lula said. You got a communication issue. And anyways, how are you sure he don't be out dating other people? I mean, he got permission, right? Maybe he's dating that skank Joyce Barnhart. What then?
I'd kill him.
You get 10 to life for that one, Lula said.
I turned toward Kreiner Street. I'm giving Ziggy another try. Chapter 5. I parked in front of Ziggy's house for the second time that day, got out of the car, and walked to his front door. He was dumb enough to answer his door the first time. Maybe he'd be dumb enough to answer it again. I rang the bell and waited. No response. I rang again. Nothing. I tried the doorknob. Locked. Stay here and bang on the door, I said to Lula. I'm going around back. If he cracks the door, shove it open and go in.
No way, Lula said. He's a vampire.
He's not a vampire, and even if he is, he probably can't do much damage if he's got his teeth in a jar.
Okay, but if he smiles at me and he's got fangs, I'm out of here.
I jogged around to the back of the house and scoped it out. Windows were covered in blackout shades, just like the front. A small stoop led to the back door. I could faintly hear Lula banging on the front door. I tried the back door. Locked, just like the front. I stood on tiptoes, ran my hand over the top of the door jamb, and found the key. I opened the door and stepped into the kitchen. Dark wood cabinets, yellow formica counters, no dirty dishes, no containers indicating blood bank withdrawal. I had cuffs tucked into the waistband of my jeans, and my stun gun was in my pocket. I moved through the kitchen into the dining room. I could hear the television in the living room.
Ziggy, I yelled. It's Stephanie Plum. I need to talk to you.
I heard a gasp and some cussing and someone moving. I stepped into the living room and saw Ziggy standing to one side of the couch, poised to run, looking unsure where to go. Lula was still hammering on the door. I went to the front door and pointed a finger at Ziggy, Stay. Don't move from that spot.
What do you want?
You need to go with me to reschedule your court date.
I told you to come back at night. Or maybe I could chance it on a real cloudy day,
he added as an afterthought. I went to the front door, slipped the deadbolt back, and before I could open the door, Lula gave it a shove and knocked me on my butt. Oops, Lula said, looking down at me.
I thought you were the vampire.
Ziggy sprang into action and streaked past us, heading for the stairs to the second floor. Grab him, I yelled to Lula. He might be going for his teeth. Lula did a flying lunge and caught Ziggy's legs. They both went to the ground and rolled around with Lula holding tight and Ziggy squirming to get away.
Zap him, Lula said. Cuff him. Do something. This is like trying to hold on to a snake. He's all wriggly.
I had my stun gun in hand, but I couldn't get a clear shot. If I tagged Lula by mistake, I'd be the one wrestling with Ziggy all by myself.
What's he doing? Lula shrieked. Is he sucking on my neck? I feel someone sucking on my neck. Get him off me.
I pressed the stun gun prongs against Ziggy's flailing arm and hit the go button. Ziggy squeaked and went inert. Lula hauled herself up off the floor and put her hand to her neck.
Do I got holes? Am I bleeding? Do I look like I'm turning into a vampire?
No, no, and no, I told her. He doesn't have his teeth in. He was just gumming you.
That's disgusting, Lula said. I've been gummed by an old vampire. I feel gross. My neck's all wet. What's on my neck?
I squinted over at Lula. Looks like a hickey.
Are you shitting me? This worthless bag of bones gave me a hickey?
Lula pulled a mirror out of her purse and checked her neck out.
I'm not happy, Lula said. First off, I don't know if I got vampire cooties from this. And second, how am I going to explain a hickey to my date tonight?
I cuffed Ziggy and stood back. He was still on the floor, not moving. We need to get him out to the car, I said to Lula.
His eyes are sort of open, but he don't look like he's seeing a lot, Lula said. Give him a kick and see if he feels it.
I bent over Ziggy. Hey, I said. Are you okay? Can you get up? Ziggy's hand twitched a little and his mouth opened, but no words came out.
I haven't got all day here, Lula said. I need to Google vampire bites, and then I need to get some makeup for my neck.
She grabbed Ziggy's foot.
Get his other foot and we'll drag him out.
We dragged Ziggy across the room, and I opened the front door. The second the sunlight hit him, Ziggy started shrieking. It was a high-pitched, keening ee of the glass-breaking variety.
Holy shit, holy crap, holy moly, Lula said, dropping Ziggy's foot, jumping away. What the hell's wrong with him?
I kicked the door closed, and Ziggy stopped screaming.
I almost got diarrhea, Lula said. That was horrible. I never heard anyone make a sound like that.
Ziggy's eyes were narrowed, and his breath hissed from between clenched gums.
No, son, he said.
Okay, now I'm freaking, Lula said. I don't know what to do. On the one hand, I'm thinking we need to drag him into the sun and burn him up and the world has one less vampire. But then, on the other hand, I don't want to see him get all oozing and gnarly like in a horror movie. I hate them horror movies where people get crispy.
So what's the deal? I asked Ziggy. Are you a vampire? Ziggy shrugged his shoulders.
I might be, he said.
How about we wrap him in a quilt, Lula said. That way we won't cook him.
Is that going to work for you? I asked Ziggy.
I guess. Just don't leave any holes where the sun can get to me. Wrap me up real good. And would you mind going upstairs and getting me my teeth?
Hell no, Lula said. We're not getting you no teeth. You already gave me a hickey. That's as far as I'm going with this whole creepy vampire thing.
We wrapped Ziggy in the quilt from his bed, carried him to my car, and loaded him into the back seat. 10 minutes from the police station, he started to thrash around in his quilt. What's going on back there? I asked Ziggy.
I'm restless, Ziggy said. I got restless leg syndrome, and I'm hungry. I need some blood.
Pull over, Lula said to me. I'm getting out.
For the love of Pete, he's in a quilt, he's toothless, and he's handcuffed, I said to Lula. And besides, he's not a vampire.
How do you know he's not a vampire?
I don't believe in vampires.
Yeah, me either. But how can you be sure? And anyways, he freaks me out no matter what the heck he is.
Chapter 6 By the time we dropped Ziggy off at the police station and made a makeup run for Hickey cover-up, it was almost noon.
Where are we going for lunch? Lula wanted to know.
I thought I'd stop at Giovacchini's. Giovacchini's deli was on Hamilton, not far from the Bond's office. It was a family enterprise, and it was second only to the funeral home for feeding the Berg gossip mill. It carried a full line of deli meats and cheeses, homemade coleslaw, potato salad, macaroni salad, and baked beans. It also had Italian specialty items, and it served as the local grocery with all the usual staples found in a convenience store.
I love Giovacchini's, Lula said. I could get a roast beef sandwich with beans and potato salad, and they got the best pickles, too.
5 minutes later, Lula and I were at the deli counter ordering sandwiches from Gina Giovacchini. Gina was the youngest of the three Giovacchini girls. She's been married to Stanley Lorenzo for 10 years, but everyone still calls her Gina Giovacchini.
I heard they found Lou Dugan, Gina said to me. Were you there when they dug him up?
No, but I got there soon after.
Me too, Lula said. His hand was reaching up out of the grave. It was like he'd been buried alive.
Gina gasped. Oh my God, is that true? Was he buried alive? Supposedly he was involved in some big deal that went bad.
Must have gone real bad, Lula said. They planted him under the garbage cans.
What kind of deal? I asked Gina.
I don't know. One of the girls who danced at the club was here getting an antipasto platter last week, and she said Lou was real nervous just before he disappeared, talking about losing a bunch of money, making travel plans.
Where was he going?
She didn't say.
Lula and I took our sandwiches back to my car, and I drove the short distance to the Bond's office. Mooner's bus was still parked at the end of the block. The medical examiner's truck was still on the scene. A bunch of men huddled on the sidewalk. An estate crime scene van was parked on the sidewalk just beyond the men. The yellow crime scene tape blocked off the entire construction site, and two men wearing CSI jackets were working at the excavation area.
Life sure is strange, Lula said. One day everything is going along normal as can be, and then next thing you know, your place of business is firebombed and Mr. Titty gets buried there.
She thought about it for a couple beats.
I suppose for us that is normal.
A disturbing thought, and not far from the truth. Maybe my mother is right. Maybe it's time to stop stun-gunning men who think they're vampires, get married, and settle down. I could learn to cook, I said.
Sure you could, Lula said. You could cook the crap out of shit. What are you talking about?
It was just a thought that popped into my head.
It should pop back out, because now that I'm thinking about it, I've seen you cook, and it wasn't pretty.
I parked behind Connie's car, and Lula and I hauled our food into the RV. Connie was behind her computer at the dinette table, and Mooner was lounging on the couch playing Donkey Kong on his Game Boy. It didn't take a lot to entertain Mooner. Where's Vinny? I asked Connie. I didn't see his car.
He went down to the station to rebond Ziggy.
Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, Ziggy made his one phone call and court's in session, so Vinny should be able to get Ziggy released right away.
The deal with a bail bond is that the court sets a dollar amount on freedom. For instance, if a guy's arrested and charged with a crime, he then goes to court, and the judge tells him either he can stay in jail or else he can pay a certain amount of money and go home until trial. He only gets the money back if he shows up for trial. We come in when the guy doesn't have enough money to give to the court. We give the money to the court on his behalf and charge the guy a percentage for the service. Good for us and bad for him. Even if he's innocent, he's out our fee. If he skips out on his trial, I find him and drag him back into the system so we don't lose our money to the court.
How's Ziggy going to get home? Lula wanted to know. He got that whole vampire thing going with the sunlight and all.
I don't know, Connie said. Not my problem.
I ate my ham and cheese sandwich and washed it down with a diet soda. Lula plowed through a Reuben, a tub of potato salad, and a tub of baked beans.
How do I look? Lula asked. Do I look like I'm getting to be a vampire? Because I don't feel so good.
You don't feel good because you just ate a bucket of fried chicken, half a coffee cake, and a Reuben with over half a pound of meat on it. Anyone else would have to get their stomach pumped.
I'm an emotional eater, Lula said. I had to settle my stomach on account of I had an upsetting morning.
Lula leaned forward and stared at me.
What's on your forehead? Boy, that's a mother of a pimple.
I felt my forehead. She was right. There was a big bump on it. It wasn't there when I got up this morning, I said. Are you sure it's a pimple? It's not a boil, is it? Lula squinted.
Looks to me like a pimple, but what do I know?
Connie studied it. I'd say it's a pimple that has the potential to approach boil quality. I pulled my compact out of my purse and looked at the pimple. Eek! I dabbed some powder on it.
You're gonna need more than powder to cover that, Lula said. It's like that volcano that exploded. Krakatoa.
I smeared concealer on Krakatoa, and I thought about Grandma Mazur and the dream about the road apples.
That's better, Lula said. Now it just looks like a tumor.
Lovely.
As far as tumors go, it's not a real big tumor, Lula said. It's one of them starter tumors.
Forget the tumor, I told her.
It's hard to forget when you gotta stare at it, Lula said. Now that I know it's there, I can't see anything else. It's like Rudolph with the red nose.
I looked at Connie. How bad is it?
It's a big pimple.
It's just a big pimple, I said to Lula. Lula thought for a beat.
Maybe it would help if you had bangs to cover it up.
But I don't have bangs, I said. I've never had bangs.
Yeah, but you could, Lula said.
I dropped the concealer into my bag and pulled out Merlin Brown's file. Finney had written bond for Brown 2 years ago without a problem. The charge had been shoplifting, and Brown had done some minor time for it. Hard to know what the issue was now that he'd been brought in for armed robbery. Either Brown simply forgot his court date, or else he wasn't excited about the idea of doing more time. I tapped his number into my cell phone and waited. A man picked up on the third ring, and I hung up. He's home, I said to Lula.
Let's roll.
Chapter 7. Merlin Brown lived in a low-rent apartment complex that made my cheapskate apartment building look good. The buildings were red brick, 3 stories tall, and utterly without adornment, unless you counted the spray-painted graffiti. No balconies, no fancy front doors, 70s aluminum windows, no landscaping. They sat perched on hard-packed dirt in no man's land between the junkyard and the gutted lead pipe factory on Upper Stark Street. A discarded refrigerator and sad sack couch had been left by the dumpster at the end of the parking lot. 4 men sat on the couch, chugging from bottles wrapped in brown paper bags. The guy on the end weighed somewhere in the vicinity of 300 pounds, and the whole couch sloped in his direction.
Maybe I should be more careful what I eat, Lula said. I don't mind being a big woman, but I don't want to get to be a huge woman. I don't want no couch sloping in my direction.
Here's the thing I've noticed about Lula. I've seen her when she's on a healthy eating plan, holding her calories down. I've seen her on ridiculous fad diets, and I've seen her when she eats everything in sight. And so far as I can tell, her weight never changes. He's in Building B, I told Lula. 3rd floor, apartment 307.
Who we gonna be? Pizza delivery? Census taker? Local hoe?
I thought I'd just ring his bell and see what happens.
He might be happy to see you. Going to jail might be a treat after living here.
We entered a small lobby with a bank of mailboxes on one side and an elevator on the other. There was a sign next to the elevator that said it was out of service. The sign looked like it had been up there for a long time. Lula pushed the elevator button anyway, and we waited a couple minutes. Eventually, we heard groaning and creaking, and the elevator doors opened. We looked into the dark interior of the elevator and decided to take the stairs.
This isn't so bad, Lula said when we got to the 3rd floor. So far, I haven't seen any rats or blood spatter. No alligators either. Mostly from what I can tell, the problem is this place don't have amenities aside from the recreational area by the dumpster.
We walked halfway down the hall and stood outside Unit 307 listening at the door. A television was droning inside the apartment.
Probably he's got a gun, Lula said, being that he's wanted for armed robbery. I guess if I'm turning into a vampire, I don't have to worry so much about getting shot, so maybe I should be the one to go through the door first.
Okay, you can go first.
But then, suppose I'm not turning into a vampire. There might not have been any vampire venom transferred since I just got a hickey.
No problem. I've got it. I knocked on the door, and Lula stood to one side. The door opened, and Merlin looked out at us.
What?
Merlin said.
Merlin Brown was 6'2" and built like a linebacker for Dallas. His skin was a shade past Lula's. He had a lightning bolt carved into his forehead, 2 gold teeth in the front of his mouth, and he'd answered the door buck naked. His Mr. Happy was hanging at half-mast and was about the size of a wanger on a champion stud Clydesdale. Lula looked Merlin up and down.
Mother of God!
Bond engorgement, I said. I blew out some air and corrected myself. Bond enforcement.
I'm busy,
Brown said. That was pretty much stating the obvious.
You got a lady friend here? Lula asked him.
Nope.
Boyfriend?
Nope.
You always walk around like this?
Pretty much. I got laid off a couple months ago and I haven't got a lot to do. I rob a store once in a while, but that's about it. So I pass the time doing, you know.
Well, this here's your lucky day, Lula said. We got an activity for you. All you gotta do is put some clothes on and come with us.
I go with you and I'm gonna end up in jail. I already been in jail and I didn't like it. Anyways, I got a better idea,
Brown said.
How about you take your clothes off and we stay here? In fact, how about if I help you? How about if I start off helping myself to Miss Skinny-Ass Bounty Hunter here?
I took a step back and talked out of the side of my mouth to Lula.
Do you have your G-U-N with you?
Yeah, Lula said. You think it's time to use it?
I know what you spelled,
Brown said.
You spelled gun, like you'd shoot me, right? First off, you're girls, and second, you can't shoot an unarmed man. I could do whatever I want, and you can't shoot me.
Lula pulled her 9mm Glock out of her purse, aimed it at Brown's foot, and fired off a shot. It missed by about 6 inches, so she made a course correction and squeezed off another round. The second round was also off the mark. No surprise, since Lula was the world's worst shot. Lula couldn't hit the side of a barn if she was standing 3 feet away from it.
You fat chicks can never shoot worth anything, Brown said. It's been one of my observations.
Excuse me? Lula said, eyes narrowed, nostrils flaring. Fat chick? Did you just call me a fat chick? I better have heard wrong because I don't like being called a fat chick.
And then Lula got lucky, or unlucky, depending on your point of view, and she shot Brown's pinky toe off.
Yo!
Brown yelled.
What the fuck? Are you fucking nuts?
And he fainted. Crash. Flat out on his back with his foot bleeding and his flagpole standing at attention. Lula stared down at Brown's stiffy.
He must have taken one of those pills on account of that's just not normal.
You've got to stop shooting people, I said to Lula. It's against the law.
He said I was a fat chick. That's not a good reason to shoot someone's toe off. Seemed like it at the time, Lula said. What are we going to do now? We're going to drag his ass out to the car?
If we bring him in now, we'll have to take him to the hospital first, and then we're going to have to explain the missing toe.
Yeah, and the giant boner. I don't mind so much taking responsibility for the toe, but I don't want nothing to do with the boner.
His cell phone was lying on the coffee table. I dialed 911, gave a phony name, reported a shooting, and gave the address.
Uh-oh, Lula said. Mr. Big got his eyes open.
Brown blinked up at Lula.
What happened?
You fainted.
My foot hurts.
You must have stubbed your toe on the way down, Lula said. That's why you should be wearing shoes.
Now I remember,
he said.
I didn't stub my toe. You fucking shot me.
Lula stuffed her hands on her hips.
You said I was fat. I got a mind to shoot you again.
Brown catapulted himself off the floor and lunged at Lula.
Ah!
I grabbed Lula by the back of her shirt and yanked her to the door. Go! Run!
Out of my way, Lula said, rushing past me. He got crazy eyes.
Between the missing toe and the male enhancement issue, after the initial lunge, Brown wasn't able to move all that fast. Lula and I thundered down the stairs, chugged across the parking lot, threw ourselves into the car, and took off. Lula was breathing heavy.
Do you think he'll tell the police on me?
No. Brown doesn't want to have anything to do with the police. By the time the police get to his apartment, he'll be long gone. Good for Lula, I thought, checking the pimple out in the rearview mirror, but not so good for Vinny.
You keep looking at your pimple and we're going to have an accident, Lula said.
Now that I know it's there, I can't get it out of my mind.
At least you don't have a vampire hickey on your neck. I got a date with a hunk of lovin' tonight. He might be Mr. Wonderful.
Maybe you could put a scarf around your neck.
What happens when hunk of lovin' undresses me?
Maybe you could decorate it to look like a tattoo gone bad. Chapter 8. To get back to the bonds office from Merlin Brown's apartment, I had to drive down Stark, past the junkyard, and cut through the combat zone. This was a mixture of graffiti-covered, rat-infested three-story brick rooming houses, garbage-strewn empty lots, and sketchy businesses operating out of barred storefronts and back alleys. It was shocking to think anyone lived in this destroyed neighborhood, and even more shocking to know some of them were good, decent people. They were victims of time and circumstance, struggling not to succumb to the wreckage around them. It was less shocking to know that most of the residents were drugged-out deadbeats, crackhead hookers, dope dealers, gangbangers, and homicidal maniacs. If I had to go after an FTA on this part of Stark, I usually asked Ranger for help. Ranger was a bounty hunter working for Vinny when I first met him. He has his own security firm now, but he still does the occasional felon apprehension. He's my mentor, my friend, and my one-time lover. He's a guy I go to when I need professional help. I'm all in favor of women holding their own in the workplace, but I don't have a death wish. Ranger is a far better bounty hunter than I could ever hope to be. And if I was being honest about it, sometimes I went to Ranger just because I liked working with him.
You going back to the office? Lula asked.
Yeah, I thought I'd check in and then head home.
I got a plan, Lula said. I'm going to the mall, and I'm going to get a feather boa to match this new sparkly outfit I was going to wear tonight. A feather boa will dress it up better than a scarf, and then I can get undressed all except for the boa. I could work the boa into my whole routine of seduction, and my neck will be covered.
You have a routine of seduction?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was a professional, and I still got moves.
I didn't want to think too hard about Lula and her moves. On the one hand, it was way too much information. On the other hand, I felt inadequate. My big move was to get out of my underpants without snagging my foot and falling on my face. I followed the cross street to Hamilton and turned toward the bonds office. Minutes later, I parked behind Mooner's bus. Morelli's car was angle parked in front of the bus, and Morelli was standing in the middle of the field.
That is one fine man, Lula said, looking at Morelli. I don't know what your problem is. I wouldn't have any trouble saying yes to him. I'd say yes to whatever he was asking.
I had to admit he was definitely fine. Lula cut her eyes to me.
So when was the last time you two got busy?
A while ago.
So why is that?
It's complicated.
Huh, Lula said.
When Lula said huh like that, it indicated total disgust. Okay, I said. It's because I'm confused. I'm having commitment issues.
You mean you can't choose between Morelli and Ranger? I'm telling you, girl, you know what you gotta do. You gotta have a bake-off, a throwdown, a love fest. Hell, just ask them if they want to go head-to-head in the sack and see what they say. You'd be doing them a favor on account of you'd be making up your mind. And then, just for the heck of it, maybe you can throw in that guy Dave that your mom likes.
I cut my eyes to Lula. You can't be serious.
Damn Skippy, I'm serious.
Something to consider, I said.
While you're considering, you might want to do something about Krakatoa. Like if you put a little teeny skirt on that barely covers your doodah, no one's ever going to look at your face. And on top of that, it gives a man incentive to be real nice to you.
Words of wisdom.
You bet your ass, Lula said. I'm going into the bus now before Mr. Titty's ghost creeps up around me.
I didn't have a sense of Mr. Titty's ghost, so I went over to say hello to Morelli. What's going on? I asked him.
I'm trying to get a grip on this. The forensic guys think Lou was buried within 24 hours of his disappearance.
Cause of death?
Looks like broken neck.
Gina Giovaccini said Lou had a big business deal go south just before he disappeared. Word was he had travel plans.
I've heard that rumor, Morelli said. So far, I haven't been able to get any details.
How about Mrs. Lou?
Mrs. Liu would be the last to know anything, Morelli said. She's been in a self-induced Xanax coma for years.
Have you tried talking to her?
Yeah. It was painful and unproductive.
I realized Morelli was staring at my forehead. It's a pimple, I told him. Morelli grinned.
I hadn't noticed, but now that you mention it.
Liar.
Fortunately for you, I know the perfect cure for a pimple of that magnitude. Sweaty gorilla sex. Lots of it.
I got this from your crazy grandmother. She gave me the eye, and she said I was going to get boils.
Cupcake, there's no such thing as the eye. And that's not a boil. It's a monster pimple. It's that time of the month, right?
Wrong.
Good to know,
Morelli said, slinging an arm around my shoulders, hugging me into him.
I have plans.
Where are we going to eat tonight?
It's a surprise.
Pino's? I asked him.
No.
Campiello's?
No.
Sal's Steakhouse?
No.
Morelli wasn't a surprise kind of guy. Maybe about doggy-style sex, but that was it. So I was getting a weird feeling. Where are we eating tonight? I asked him again. Morelli blew out a sigh.
At my mom's house. It's my Uncle Rocco's birthday.
No. No, no, no.
Oh, man, I'm begging,
Morelli said.
I hate these parties. I'll make a deal. You go with me, and I'll give you a back rub.
No way. Your grandmother will be there, and she'll put another curse on me.
Okay, a back rub, and I'll buy you a birthday cake.
No. Morelli looked down at me, serious.
What'll it take?
I'll hook up with you after dinner. That's the best I can offer.
Better than nothing,
he said.
Can I still give you a back rub?
Yes. Do I get the birthday cake?
No.
He looked over at the Bonds bus.
Are you going in there?
Yes, I was going to take off for home, but I think I'll touch base with Connie before I leave.
Try not to inhale the fumes coming off the upholstery, and don't eat anything he's baking.
He pulled me close, kissed me, and whispered a couple innovations he was going to add to the back rub. Connie was at her computer, Lula was sitting in a club chair, and Mooner was on the couch working his way through an app on his cell phone when I swung into the bus. I can't help thinking there was some significance to Lou Dugan getting buried on the Bonds office property, I said to Connie. I've wondered about that, Connie said, but I can't think of a connection. What about Vinny? Did Vinny have something going on with Dugan? Vinny was a regular at the titty bar before Lucille hooked him up to a leash and a choke collar, but I never got the feeling Vinny and Dugan were friends or business partners. Harry? Don't know about Harry, Connie said. He's mostly a silent partner here. He puts some money up so his son-in-law can be gainfully employed, but he doesn't take much interest in the business.
Maybe Vinny ran up a tab at the titty bar and he didn't want to pay it, so he off Lou Dugan and buried him in his backyard,
Lula said. It would work for me, Connie said, except I can't see Vinny digging a hole big enough to plant Dugan. Not a lot of muscle going on in that weaselly body, and Vinny wouldn't have left a ring on Dugan's finger.
Maybe the killers were aliens, and they were following instructions from the mothership,
Mooner said.
Like, maybe they needed to do an anal probe, and you know, like, the ring might not have any value in another solar system.
We all stared open-mouthed at Mooner for a moment.
You gotta cut back on the brownies,
Lula said to Mooner. Connie made a small grimace and dragged her attention from Mooner to me.
How'd it go with Merlin Brown?
We found him, but then we lost him, I said. No problem. I have a lead. I just need to make a couple phone calls. There are two hospitals in Trenton, Helen Fuld and St. Francis. I was guessing Merlin drove himself to one of the hospitals to get his foot patched up. If that was the case, he was probably either still waiting, depending on how much he was bleeding, or else he was with a doctor. I called Helen Fuld first and asked for Merlin. They didn't have anyone checked in by that name, and they didn't have anyone with a toe amputation. Connie had been listening.
Toe amputation? She asked, eyebrows raised.
You don't want to know, I told her.
Huh,
Lula said, arms crossed over her chest.
He said I was fat.
You're right, Connie said. I don't want to know. Were there witnesses?
I shook my head. No. I called St. Francis next and asked for Jenny Christo. I went to high school with Jenny, and now she was an ER nurse. Nope, she said. No one here named Merlin Brown. No one with a bloody foot.
Well?
Lula asked when I got off the phone. He wasn't at either hospital. He must have gone to a clinic or a private doctor. Unfortunate, because if he'd gone to either of the hospitals, I could have picked him up when he checked out and left. The door to the motor coach opened, and Vinny stumbled up a step.
Cripes, why don't you turn some lights on, he said. I feel like a goddamn mole.
All the lights are on, Connie told him. Did you rebond Ziggy?
Yeah, that guy is 4 cans short of a case. He told the judge he was a vampire.
What did the judge say?
He said he didn't care if he was Winston Churchill or Mickey Mouse. He damn well better show up for his court appearance next time.
My phone buzzed and my parents' number popped up on my screen.
Your mother asked me to call and see if you want to come for dinner tonight, being that she's making meatloaf and rice pudding, Grandma said. It's not every day she makes rice pudding.
I loved my mother's rice pudding.
Sure, I said. Dinner would be good.
This was a much better option than Joe's Uncle Rocco's birthday party, and I'd still get to see Joe after dinner. Chapter 9. I swapped out the red tank top and jeans for a deep blue stretchy knit sweater with a low scoop neck, a little black skirt, and spiky heels. The only reason Morelli wanted me to wear the red shirt was because he hadn't seen the blue sweater. I had cleavage in the blue sweater. Okay, so I had a little help from a push-up bra, but it was cleavage all the same. I had my hair long in big loose curls and waves, and I added extra gunk to my eyelashes. I was in date night mode. I was going to get meatloaf, rice pudding, a back rub, and then I was most likely going to get naked. Shazam! Could life possibly get any better? I gave myself one last look in the bathroom mirror. Yes, in fact, life could get better. The pimple in the middle of my forehead could disappear. I tried makeup, and that didn't work. Only one thing left. Bangs. I sectioned off some hair, took the scissors to it, and the deed was done. A moment with a flat iron, swiped the bangs partially to the side, some hairspray. Goodbye, pimple. My parents eat dinner at 6 o'clock. Precisely. If everyone's ass is not in the seat promptly at 6 and the dinner is delayed by 5 minutes, my mother declares the meal ruined. The pot roast is dry, the gravy is cold, the beans are overcooked. It all tastes perfectly fine to me, but what do I know? My major cooking accomplishment is a peanut butter and olive sandwich. I arrived at 6:10, said hello to my dad in the living room, and paused at the dining room table on my way to the kitchen. The table was set for 5 people. My mom, my dad, my grandmother, me, and one other person. I immediately knew in my gut I'd been suckered in. Why is there an extra place set at the table? I asked my mother. Who did you invite? She was at the counter next to the sink, and she was bent over a steaming pot of drained potatoes, mashing them for all she was worth, her lips pressed tight together.
We invited that nice young man, Dave Brewer, who swindled all those people out of their houses, Grandma said, pulling a meatloaf out of the oven.
He didn't swindle anyone, my mother said. He was framed. I eyeballed the pudding sitting in a bowl on the kitchen table and gauged the distance to the door. If I moved fast, I could probably get away with the pudding before my mother tackled me.
There's something different about you, Grandma said to me. You've got bangs.
My mother looked up from the potatoes. You've never had bangs? She studied me for a beat. I like them. They bring out your eyes. The doorbell rang, and my mother and grandmother snapped to attention.
Someone get the door, my father yelled.
My father took the trash out, washed the car, and did anything associated with plumbing, but he didn't get the door. It wasn't on his side of the division of labor.
I got my hands full with the meatloaf, Grandma said.
I blew out a sigh.
I'll get it.
If Dave Brewer was too awful, I could let him in and just keep right on going out to my car. The heck with the pudding. I opened the door and took a step back. Brewer was a pleasant-looking guy with a lot less hair than I remembered. The athletic body he'd had in high school had turned soft around the middle. in direct contrast to Morelli and Ranger, who seemed to come into sharper focus as they aged. He was half a head taller than me. His blue eyes had some squint lines at the corners. What was left of his sandy blonde hair was trimmed short. He was dressed in black slacks and a blue dress shirt that was open at the neck.
Stephanie?
He asked.
Yep.
This is awkward.
For the record, this wasn't my idea. I have a boyfriend.
Morelli.
Yes.
I wouldn't want to tangle with him,
Brewer said. I felt my eyebrows go up ever so slightly. But you're here?
I'm temporarily living with my mother, he said. She made me come.
Good grief, I thought. The poor dumb schmuck was worse off than I was. At 6:01, the food was set on the table, and my father pushed himself out of his chair and headed for the dining room. My father took early retirement from his job at the post office and now drives a cab part-time. He has a couple steady fares that he takes to the train station 5 days a week, and then he picks his friends up and drives them to the Sons of Italy Lodge where they play cards. He's 5'10" and stocky. He's got a lot of forehead, and beyond that, a fringe of curly black hair. He doesn't own a pair of jeans, preferring pleated slacks and collared knit shirts from the Tony Soprano collection at JCPenney. He endures my grandmother with what seems like grim resignation and selective deftness, though I suspect he harbors murderous fantasies. I was seated next to Dave with Grandma across from us.
Isn't this nice? Grandma said. It isn't every day we get to have a handsome young man at the table.
My father shoveled in food and murmured something that sounded a little like, just shoot me. Hard to tell with the meatloaf rolling around in his mouth.
So, what are you doing here in Trenton? Grandma asked.
I'm working for my Uncle Harry.
Harry Brewer owned a moving and storage company. When I moved out of my house after the divorce, I used Brewer Movers.
Are you moving furniture? Grandma asked.
No. I'm doing job estimating and general office work. My cousin Francie used to do it, but she had some words with my uncle, left work, and never came back, so I stepped in to help out.
Grandma made a sucking sound with her dentures.
Has anyone heard from her?
Not that I know.
Just like Lou Dugan, Grandma said.
I knew about Francie, and it wasn't exactly like Lou Dugan. Francie's boyfriend was also missing. And when Francie stormed out of the office, she took almost $5,000 in petty cash with her. The theory going around is that Francie and her boyfriend were in Vegas.
Who wants wine? My mother asked. We have a nice bottle of red on the table.
Grandma helped herself to wine and passed it across the table to Dave.
I bet you and Stephanie have a lot in common, being that you went to school together.
Nothing, I said. Nada. Dave stopped his fork halfway to his mouth.
There must be something.
What? I asked him.
A mutual friend?
I don't think so.
You played football and she was a twirler, Grandma said. You must have been on the field together.
Nope, I said. We were on at halftime and they were in the locker room. He turned and looked at me.
Now I remember you. You flipped your baton into the trombone section during the Star Spangled Banner.
It wasn't my fault, I said. It was cold and my fingers were frozen. And if you so much as crack a smile over this, I'll stab you with my fork.
She's pretty tough, Grandma said to Dave. She's a bounty hunter, and she shoots people.
I don't shoot people, I said. Almost never.
Show him your gun, Grandma said.
I spooned mashed potatoes onto my plate. I'm sure he doesn't want to see my gun. Anyway, I don't have it with me.
She's got just a little one, Grandma said. Mine's bigger. Do you want to see my gun?
My mother poured herself a second glass of wine, and my father gripped his knife so hard his knuckles turned white.
Maybe later, Dave said.
You are not supposed to have a gun, my mother said to my grandmother.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Okay, I gave the gun away, Grandma said to Dave, but it's a beaut.
What about you?
My father asked Dave.
Do you have a gun?
Dave shook his head.
No, I don't need a gun.
I don't trust a man who doesn't own a gun,
my father said, slitty-eyed at Dave, forkful of meatloaf halfway to his mouth.
I don't usually agree with my son-in-law, Grandma said, but he's got a point.
Do you have a gun?
Dave asked my dad.
I used to,
my dad said.
I had to get rid of it when Edna moved in. Too much temptation.
My mother drained her wine glass. Anyone want more potatoes? She asked.
I'll have another piece of meatloaf, Dave said.
The way to good meatloaf is to use lots of ketchup when you're mixing it up, Grandma said. It's our secret ingredient.
I'll remember that, Dave said. I like to cook. I'd like to go to culinary school, but I can't afford it right now.
My father stopped chewing for a beat and gave his head an almost imperceptible shake, as if this sealed the deal on his assessment of Dave Brewer.
How about you? Dave asked me. Do you like to cook?
Interesting question. He didn't ask me if I could cook. The answer to that was easy. No, I for sure couldn't cook. Anything beyond a sandwich and I was a mess. The thing is, he asked me if I liked to cook. And that was a more complicated question. I didn't know if I liked to cook. Someone was always cooking for me. My mom, Morelli's mom, Ranger's housekeeper, and a bunch of professionals at delis, pizza places, supermarkets, sandwich shops, and fast food joints. I don't know if I like to cook, I told him. I've never had a reason to try. I wasn't married long enough to get the stickers off the bottoms of the pots.
And then her apartment got firebombed and her cookbook got burned up, Grandma said. That was a pip of a fire.
That's too bad, Dave said. Cooking can be fun, and you get to eat what you make.
I wasn't sure I wanted to eat anything I made.
We gotta get a move on with this dinner, Grandma said. Mildred Brimmer is laid out at Steva's, and I don't want to miss anything. Everyone's gonna be talking about Lou Dugan, and I'm gonna be the star on account of Stephanie was right on the spot.
Dave turned to me.
Is that true? I heard they found him buried on the bonds office property.
Yeah, I said. The backhoe guy uncovered a hand and part of the arm. I wasn't there when they exhumed the rest of him.
I heard they recognized him by his ring, Dave said.
I nodded. Morelli spotted it. I'm sure they'll do more forensic work to be certain.
That's the good part about living in the burg, Grandma said. There's always something interesting going on.
We made our way through the dinner in record time so Grandma could get to her viewing. No one spilled the wine or set the tablecloth on fire by knocking over a candlestick. The conversation was mildly embarrassing since it was full of not-so-subtle references about Dave and me becoming a couple, but I'd been through far worse. Sorry about the matchmaking, I said to Dave as I showed him to the door after dinner was over.
By the end of the meal, I was almost convinced we were engaged.
He stared down at my cleavage.
I was starting to warm to the idea.
He gave me a polite kiss on the cheek.
Maybe we can be friends. I can give you a cooking lesson.
Sure, I said. Cooking would be good.